Horrible Histories the Concert wants to bring you all the classic hit from the TV show, packed with loads of historical fun facts, fart noises, and fun for everybody who's consumed Horrible Histories content at any point in their lives. I spoke to Neil Foster, who is the company's / manager and the creative force behind all of the horrible stage shows since 2005. He works along a cast of Richard David Kahn, Harry Hayes, Inell Tomlinson, Ethan Lawrence, Verona Rose, and Alison Fitzjohn, who together create the cast for Horrible Histories the Concert, alongside a live band as well. They'll be performing in the York Barbican on the 6th and 7th of April, and then for other people in the north, Friday the 17th and 18th of April, they'll be in the Sunderland Empire. I chatted to Neil a little bit about the creative workings behind the show and about why he cares so passionately about bringing it to theatre. So, have a listen. I'm here with Neil, who's the co-producer, director, Charles II, Dick Turpin, and various other roles in Horrible Histories the Concert. Say hi, Neil.
Hello, lovely to talk to you.
Now, my first question, Neil, is that obviously Horrible Histories is something that has a lot of significance to a lot of people. How true is the concert to the Horrible Histories that we know and love?
Well, we've been producing Horrible Histories on stage for the last 21 years, and we started off effectively being the stage version of the books. But of course, once the television started, we all influence each other, and so our shows became very much like sketch formats in the way that you see on the television. And it's progressed to the point that this particular show, Horrible Histories the Concert, is the first time we've actually collaborated with the TV series on tour. 3 years ago, we got together to produce Horrible Opera, The Prom, for the BBC at the Royal Albert Hall. And we got on so well and enjoyed working with each other so much, we thought we must do this again. So we've created this very special show. And what makes it different to all the other shows that we normally produce, because we've got Horrible Histories going on all the time all over the country, is this show features all the favourite, most popular songs from the television series. And that's because in it, in the actual show, we have got Richie Webb, who, believe it or not, on his own, has written over 200 of all the songs you've ever seen on the television series. So in this show, he's on stage with us, and we sing, as well as do lots of sketches and jokes and facts and all the things you'd expect from a Horrible History stage show. We sing some of the most popular songs. So I sing The King of Bling, Charles II, and the famous Dick Turpin song. But we've also got Cleopatra, Boudicca. We've got Shakespeare, Queen Victoria, Henry VIII, Divorce, Beheaded, Died. So all the songs people know and love, the Viking song, literally. And it sort of ends with this fantastic audience participation, where we literally blow the roof off the theatre. So whatever you've seen before with Horrible Histories on stage, and we always look forward to seeing you, this one is slightly different, and we can't wait to bring it to the York Barbican.
Have you got a favourite Horrible History song, either to perform or in general?
Well, I mean, from the television series, I really enjoy singing the Charles II song, because I've got this great backing group that comes with me on stage. We've got a huge video screen on stage, which the lyrics throw up for the chorus. So the audience are all start joining in with me. So that's one of my favourites. But also we do songs in all our other shows. And I have to say, one of my favourite sketches, which is what we're doing in the West End this summer, involves the Night Soil Men. If you don't know what the Night Soil Men is, as we're coming up to lunchtime, maybe I shouldn't give you the gruesome details, that we've transferred a song which people know as Talk Dirty to Me to Get Dirty with Me, and that's all about the Victorian Night Soil Men. So I won't say any more, as people are about to tuck into their lovely ham sandwiches, but that's one of my favorite songs to do on stage as well.
Okay, obviously we're talking a lot about like songs and stuff. Is that what you think makes Horrible Histories compelling to audiences?
I wouldn't say that on its own. Okay. No, I mean, the great secret that Terry Deary had when he started creating the books, and let's remember, he's a local man to up there. He lives in Durham, and he was born in Sunderland, which is where we're going to be touring to as well. He had the great idea of writing these books, which concentrated on the gruesome, the gory, the strange, the unusual, the weird, the wacky parts of history that weren't really the main focus of attention when you studied it at school, when you got down to studying the intricacies of the Magna Carta, etc. And these books became fantastically popular. And then when we turned them into stage shows, that side of our shows is really what I regard as the horrible histories, is where you're looking at what happens when you get beheaded, or when you get hung, drawn and quartered, or when you're, you know, or when a baby farmer turns out to be a woman who actually is end up killing babies. You know, there's so many gruesome and awful things that have happened throughout history, and Horrible Histories loves exploring those stories and bringing them to life on stage. And so I would say the music is part of it, but I wouldn't say it's all of it. You know, we also want jokes. We obviously want as many farts as we can get into a show on stage. It's all about fantastic costumes, great actors, audience participation. There's so much that makes up a horrible history show that I think that's what is so great about it, and that it appeals across the ages. It's not just for children, but it's also for adults and their families. You know, we just had a dad turn up to the show a couple of weeks ago, met me at stage door, and said A Horrible History's the concert was the best show he'd ever seen in his life. You know, and this is a 40-year-old man. So, you know, that's what I love about it, that it's just appealing right across the age range with all these different facets of history.
I guess there's something also in the fact that it's been going for such a long time. Like, I know for me, I saw that it was Leon at the Barbican and I was like, oh yeah, I love that stuff. I've got to go see it. And I guess there's a sort of timelessness to it, I get, with people that have grown up with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that. I mean, there's, you know, the number of people that have got into studying history at university and then take it up as a profession, whose actually their love of history was sparked the Horrible History books and then the television series, which has obviously been going 17 years now. Our stage shows have been going 21 years. So there's an awful lot of people who grew up with it and who realized that actually history wasn't boring. It's actually fascinating. It's just the way you tell it. Like any good joke, it's the way you tell it. Well, history is the same. You know, it's got history so full of stories that if you have someone who can really tell the stories really well, it's going to be fantastic. And if, like my head of English, head of history that I had to endure when I was at school, he told stories very badly. So he made English history sound terribly boring, which of course it isn't. And Horrible Histories has sort of come to the rescue of history in that way, to really reassure people that if you want to find out interesting about what humans can do to each other, you don't just have to listen to what Donald Trump is saying every day. You can go back into the far reaches of time and find there were Donald Trumps throughout history doing terrible things to the world. And so we're not as unlucky as we think we are in having to put up with this man. You know, humans have having to be put up with these awful men throughout for as long as there have been human beings. And Horrible History is there to tell you all about it.
I guess the biggest thing Horrible Histories did for me was prove that, like, humans have always been humans. And we've always found certain things funny, and it draws a direct line between us in the present day and Tudors and Vikings and Victorians.
I think so, because, you know, obviously there's some terrible wars going on at the moment, which are, you know, really distressing. I feel maybe slightly less distressed than others, because I write the Horrible History shows on stage, and therefore I'm constantly researching and reading about just how much humans love fighting and killing each other. We've been doing it really well. And in fact, as we know, the last 70 years have been about the most peaceful in almost world history. If you go back to medieval times, there were battles every single year between not just Ukraine against Russia, but neighbors, village against village, cities against cities. Mm-hmm. The Civil War, for example, that went on in various stages for 6 years, was the whole country fighting each other. So it is, you know, if you listen to the philosopher John Gray, who just says, you know, we are a barbaric species, we'll always be barbaric. There'll be waves of peace, but in the end, we're not great when it comes to living with each other. And we do end up enjoying killing and fighting each other so that we have power or land or more food for ourselves. And that's what Horrible History is all about.
I guess to bring it back to the show, we're talking a lot about stuff that you try to cram into the show. Is there anything that maybe didn't make the cut that you're disappointed at?
No, I mean, the only thing about this particular production is that it's being produced in collaboration with the BBC. And obviously the BBC has different guidelines and stricter guidelines of what it likes to put on stage. So we did have a song. Well, we have a great song about Barnum. But there were more things in that song about what Barnum was up to when he was doing these rather strange shows than the BBC was comfortable with us talking about in the song. So it's a brand new song. It's a brilliant song. I mean, it's similar to The Greatest Showman. Mm-hmm. But we had to tone down some of the facts of what Barnum got up to because the BBC have got their guidelines and are sensitive. When I'm doing my own shows, we're a bit bolder. We're a bit more hardcore, and we tell it as it is. And you know, so that's the different versions of shows you get. That's the only thing really that I think that got changed that it would have been nice to keep the sort of the more awful stuff that Barnum did. But you know, the BBC have got their own rules, and we're very happy to work with them on that basis.
I mean, it sounds like a pretty easy and collaborative relationship that the show has with the BBC. Obviously, I think the way that most people have engaged with it is through the TV show on CBBC. Do you think it felt like a natural collaboration and a natural step forward?
Well, that was the beauty of the prom that we did. Mm-hmm. That is the first time, as I say, I'd worked with Lion Television, who produced all the TV series. We'd met each other on various social occasions, but never worked together. And I just found them great people to work with. And I've run my own company for 34 years, so I'm not actually used to working with other people or having to absorb what other people want. But they're so spot on. They understand the brand so well. They're so clever. I mean, there's a line I've got in the show that was given to me by one of the producers. He says, why don't you try that? It gets one of the biggest laughs of the show. It's great to work collaboratively with people when everyone is contributing, so that wonderful thing called synergy, when the whole is greater than the parts. And this show has really benefited in that. And the BBC, their representatives who work with us on the show have added, you know, their notes are always brilliant and they're always incisive and they're always clever. So yes, it has been a great collaboration, and I'm hoping that we'll be doing it again.
Sounds good. It sounds like you care a lot about bringing this to a stage format. Is there something specifically about taking a spin on this classic TV show and producing it for theatre that has really called to you?
Yes, well, I think that we've got a lot of TV actors in the show who've been doing the series for, some of them, for 5 or 6 years. Of course, what they say is, you know, they're in the TV studio. You know, the technicians, the cameramen may laugh or chuckle, but most of the time they're just bored and they want to go home. So for them and for us, what's great is you put these great songs in front of an audience who want to join in, who want to sing with us, who love the gags, who love all the naughtiness that we've got on stage. And it creates a really live and collaborative experience with the audience. That's what makes theatre so special. Not one single performance will be the same as the other. That couldn't be truer for this show. I mean, it's just from one show to the next, each audience brings their own energy and their own. And we're very good at adapting to that audience. So we never do just the same performance. We work with the audience to give them what they want. And as I say, the sort of the second half of the show just lifts off in a way that's so exciting that you just wouldn't get from watching it on TV or going to the cinema or listening to, you know, a podcast. When you get in front of 2,000 people, and, you know, there's eight actors and a live band on stage and all these video effects, and you've got those 2,000 people out there. The thing about theatre is it's a conversation between all of us. And like any conversations, you don't know where they're going to go, what's going to happen. And you end up sometimes having the most fantastic experience you can have as a group.
And I guess it's also about, like, each individual actor you've got and, like, big showcase that you put on and it resonating differently with each and every member of the audience as well.
Well, that's why I'm very anti these online shows. They call it, you know, the when they broadcast a theatre show into a cinema. I wouldn't mind if they called it a film or a broadcast, but whatever you do, don't call it theatre, because theatre is about the conversation between the actor and the audience. As soon as you put it on film and put it into a cinema, that audience sitting in that cinema cannot in any way interact with the actors. The actors can't respond to the audience because they're not there. So that's a film. What makes theatre unique and special is that relationship between the two. Not just laughter, but silences can become very profound between a group of people. When suddenly 2,000 people go dead quiet because something is happening in the auditorium. And when it becomes raucous and the energy and the audience start throwing things at the actors verbally that the actors weren't expecting. That's what theatre's all about. That conversation between the actors and between the actors and the audience. And in this case, with the musicians as well. And that's what I'm so glad we've got such good actors in this show who can really respond. Some actors aren't up to it. some actors can't cope with what an audience throw. They actually get thrown by an audience sometimes, just like a comedian would if they get heckled, you know, and the really finest comedians will respond, and a heckle will sometimes be the best, most exciting thing that's happened in a show. Mm-hmm. And it is the same with a live audience. You know, what they bring to it makes all the difference. And if you've got a really good group of actors, then they can really respond well and create something unique.
And like, what's been working with the team that you've got specifically for Horrible Histories, the concert? Like, what are the actors like? What's the live band like? What's like the vibe that you all bring together?
Well, they're as good as it gets. I mean, we've got Richard David Kane leading the show, playing the host, William Shakespeare. And, you know, he's a phenomenon. I don't use that word loosely. He is a phenomenon as an actor. I mean, you know, I regard myself as a good actor, but I can recognize in Richard that he's a step above. He's something for me to look at. And even though I've been doing it for 40 years, mm-hmm. I'm learning all the time from the way Richard acts. He's so truthful. He's so real, but he's so playful. He's so instinctive. He's got great improvisational skills. He can do pathos. He's an exceptional performer. And then we've got Ethan Lawrence, who a lot of people know from also Horrible Histories and Afterlife. Harry Hayes, who's been in the TV series Verona Rose, who does her own improvisational comedy shows. Alison Fitzjohn, who's done a lot of our stage shows, who's, you know, really knocks Queen Victoria out of the park. So we've got one of the best casts we've ever had. And I'm as an actor, learning a lot from the whole experience. It's a real gift to be able to go on stage with a group of people who are really at the top of their game, and hope you're contributing to that, and learning and exploring theatre all the time. The moment you think you know you how to do something is when it's dead. So it's always great to be challenged and to have further places to go with whatever you're doing. So you're always building it. And the show, certainly in the 13 weeks that we'll be touring it, has just got better and better and better and better every week, because every time the audience adds something to it, we grab it, we take it, we give it to the next audience. So the whole thing builds because you've got a group of people who really work together. And also, we all really are enjoying working together. Most of us have never met each other before. And so that's a thrill as well, to be on stage with people you've not really met, but you realize you can have a great time with. So that's very clear. A lot of the critics have picked up just how well the actors seem to be getting on with each other, and how we get on with the musicians, and how everyone's having a good time in on stage.
And do you have any rituals or traditions that you do as a team, something that you like do together before a show to get the energy up?
Well, like a lot of shows, we do warm up. Mm-hmm. So we'll warm up physically and we'll warm up vocally. And one of our actors is very good at giving us little pep talks each week, tells us where, you know, where we are and where we're going. Apart from that, all actors will have their own private things they like to do. Whether they want to be quiet just before they go on stage, whether they want to jump around and get the blood flowing. I'm one of those actors that likes to lie down and go to sleep just before I go on stage, because I expend so much energy on stage. I like to be as relaxed as I possibly can before I go on stage, because I give 100% of everything that's in my body. But there are other actors, as I say, who are dancing around, throwing themselves on the walls before they go on stage, because that's how they get themselves going. I once had an incredible experience in Glasgow. And so if ever I'm not quite feeling in the right place, I just think Glasgow. And I remember that experience. And then I can go on stage with that sort of feeling of joy flowing through me, because that's what I experienced in Glasgow. And that was 5 years ago, but it still resonates with me. I've also got a ring that was given to me by my one of my friends who died a few years ago. She wore this ring. She played Anne Boleyn at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And on the last day I saw her, she gave me this ring. And I wear it as King Charles. And sometimes I give that a kiss before I go on stage, because I feel like I'm bringing her spirit on with me, because she was a great actress and a great friend. So there's those little things we all do just to put us in the right place, in the right frame of mind, so that when we go in front of the audience, we can really connect with them in a joyful way.
And I guess my last question for you, Neil, is that within the large amount of roles that you have within the show, co-producer, director, Charles II, Dick Turpin, all of that, what's the one thing that you feel proudest to have shaped?
Well, the thing I most enjoy doing is the acting, because that's really all I'm about, as you can probably tell from this chat. But there's a wonderful thing about producing, which is you take an idea, literally either something said in the office or an email comes through, and you take these couple of words, let's do a show, and 2 years later you're on stage at the Royal Festival Hall, or as we're soon going to be at the York Barbican, okay, or at Sunderland Empire, and you're in front of these thousands of people with eight people backstage, five members of the band, eight other actors, 50 different costumes, props. And as a producer, that's an incredible thrill. But because I combine the both, I get to, rather than just sit in the audience and watch it, as most producers will do, I get to produce it and then be in it and enjoy it with everybody. So there is a big satisfaction from being a producer to taking, as I say, that something was literally just a few words that someone said and turning it into a thing, which you might end up doing, like some of my shows, for the next 20 years. That's a great thing. So it's a very hard job being a theatre producer. But you have to be a little bit mad to be willing to keep taking these risks year after year. But if it comes off and it works, it's a great fun.
Well, thank you so much for chatting to me, Neil. I guess, is there any last message you want to give to plug the show and to convey to the listeners?
Well, I think if you're looking for a fabulous family fun this Easter, this is the show for you.